I'm Frank Holland, and you're listening to CNBC's Worldwide Exchange. Our show is live weekdays at 5 a.m. Eastern. Listen in. It is 5 a.m. at CNBC Global Headquarters, 10 a.m. here in London. I am Frank Holland, and this is Worldwide Exchange. We start with breaking news this morning. Israel carries out a retaliatory airstrike against Iran in response to last weekend's unprecedented attack by Tehran. We have a live report from that region coming up. Global markets in shock as investors assess the new geopolitical risk premium and odds of further escalation or a cooling of tensions. Futures deep in the red and well off session lows. Oil, though, spiking on what this latest attack could mean for the energy markets around the world. Gold, Bitcoin also higher. It is Friday, April the 19th, 2024. You are watching Worldwide Exchange right here on CNBC. Good morning. Welcome to Worldwide Exchange. We are coming to you live from CNBC London. Thank you so much for being here with us. We begin this morning with breaking news, as we mentioned. Israel retaliating against Iran's massive and unprecedented drone and missile attack on its territory just about a week ago. Sources characterizing the early morning strike to NBC News as, quote, limited, with officials still assessing the damage and the effectiveness this morning. No comment so far from the Israel Defense Force at this hour. The strike targeted the area around Isfahan, about 5 hours south of Tehran. Iranian state media reporting that air defense systems were engaged in several provinces and that nuclear sites in that region are safe. NBC News' Andrea Mitchell also reporting the U.S. was not involved in the strike, but adding that there was a pre-notification to the United States from Israel ahead of that attack. Investors, they're still trying to digest what this means for the markets and possible escalation of regional conflict. Take a look. You can see S&P 500 futures sinking at around 10 p.m. last night when first reports of the strike started coming in. Right now, futures again well off those session lows, but still deep in the red relatively. Right now, we're taking a look at futures, as we mentioned. You can see it looks like the Dow would open up just about 125 points lower. The Nasdaq down more than 0.75%. We'll continue to watch the futures all morning long. We're seeing a similar knee-jerk reaction in treasuries. You can see the 10-year bond yield also off of its lows hit in the past 12 hours, right now at 4.58. Again, look at the chart. You can see the move to the upside after these attacks were reported. And also looking at the energy market this morning, specifically oil, trying to hold on to some of the gains that we saw earlier, actually kind of normalizing right now. We're seeing WTI right now up just about 0.5%. At one point, it was just about 3% higher. Another commodity we're watching this morning, that is gold, holding just below record highs hit after this attack. You can see right now gold trading at just even 2,400 an ounce, just falling a tick below it just now. It did move just a bit higher than that after reports of the attack. You can see again the spike on the chart right there just after 10 o'clock. We're also watching the action in the crypto markets, looking at Bitcoin in particular. Take a look. We saw Bitcoin move higher. Right now you can see it's still higher, actually. Right now trading at about 64,700. Remember, Bitcoin trades around the clock, up about 2%. We'll continue to look at the global markets and the different moves on the reaction from this attack throughout the morning. All right, let's turn back to the Middle East and a closer check at the temperature in the region and the energy market reaction. Our Dan Murphy is standing by in Dubai. Dan, we are seeing oil pulling back from its highs, but right now looking at WTI and the U.S. benchmark up just over 0.5%.
That's right, Frank. And as you say, oil prices rallied as much as 3% in Asia after it was confirmed that Israel carried out what it called a limited strike against Iran in the early hours of this morning. And looking at the market specifically here, crude stabilized and stocks came off session lows for several reasons. First of all, Iran's oil infrastructure and facilities do not appear to have been targeted here. Also, the International Atomic Energy Agency has confirmed that there is no damage to Iran's nuclear facilities. And critically, there was no reports of major damage on the ground or casualties. So market investors see this as more of a symbolic attack that may not be the catalyst for an Iranian response, another step up in escalation, or even a wider regional conflict. Analysts that I've spoken to today say it's going to be hard for Tehran to find the justification to respond or escalate. And then also on the other side here, Frank, Israel does not appear to be bracing for major immediate retaliation either. So it would appear that the situation is stabilizing, but of course, anything could happen at this point. So with that strike in the backdrop, the political fallout also begins. You mentioned earlier that Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu was informed the United States about this strike. But Frank, fair to say here, defied President Biden. He was urged by the president to take the win after Israel's successful defense on Saturday, but chose not to. It certainly exposes a wider rift in the U.S.-Israel relationship. So watch that space.
Yeah, you know, the German defense minister also said Israel should take what they called a defensive victory in that case. I want to go back to the moves on the oil market, specifically Brent. That's the international benchmark. We saw it go as high as 90.75, again, about $3 a barrel. Lower right now. You and I were talking here in Europe on Street Signs. I was also talking to an energy trader that believes oil could actually be on its way to $100 a barrel. With this as just one factor, if tensions escalate, are you hearing any other reports about Iran possibly continuing attacks in the Straits of Hormuz? That was something that he was watching again that he believed could move oil to $100 a barrel.
Exactly. So we're not just looking out to see if Iran responds directly. We're looking out to see whether or not Iranian proxies will respond to this, too. Of course, that could mean a ratcheting up of tensions in the Strait of Hormuz, where we see the Houthis continuing to target and attack shipping vessels there. So that could be a catalyst for a leg higher in oil. But at the same time, remember as well, Frank, OPEC has ample spare capacity to act here if necessary. They could potentially unwind some of their production cuts, add more supply to the market, and that would certainly lower the temperature in oil. The conversation that you were having earlier today is also critical, particularly when it comes to the inflationary impact as well. A lot of concern now that higher oil, perhaps even triple-digit oil, could be a major headache for the Fed and other global central banks as a result.
All right. Our Dan Murphy live in Dubai. Dan, great to see you as always. Thank you. All right. Turn our attention back over to stocks in Europe opening sharply lower. Sylvia Amaro is here in London with me with much more on the early action. And Sylvia, again, we were on Street Signs earlier. That was one of the things that we were talking about, the rise of oil and the inflationary impacts and how that may change the outlook for the ECB.
So we are basically 2 hours into the equity session here in Europe, and you can see that it's red across the board. All of the major bourses are trading in the red. I would highlight the more significant moves to the downside over in Italy and in Spain. But there's a lot that the traders are basically taking in at this stage. They're naturally focusing on these latest developments out of the Middle East. But let's not forget that they're all still following what central bankers are saying, as well as these latest reports from corporate. So there's a lot in the minds of investors, and I would just highlight the FTSE 100 down by about 0.7%. Earlier today, we got disappointing retail sales data for March. So all of that is in the minds of investors. So there's a lot to digest here. With that in mind, let me take you to the sectorial breakdown at this stage. We are seeing only a little bit of green when it comes to food and beverages stocks, as well as telecoms. All of the other sectors are trading in the red, with the worst performer at this stage, retail, down by about 1.5%. Now, we're also tracking quite closely what's happening when it comes to household goods, off the back of actually quite a positive report from L'Oreal early this morning, and we discussed that also on Street Signs. But let's also not forget that one of the dynamics for traders at this stage is that we continue to hear from ECB officials positioning themselves for that first rate cut in June, and at the same time, the Fed officials pushing back against expectations of them going ahead with a rate cut in the summertime.
Yeah, so much to watch when it comes to central banks. Sylvia, thank you very much. All right, turn our attention over to Asia. A very rough picture there. Our JP Ong is standing by with much more in Singapore. JP?
Yeah, good morning, Frank. And there were signs of the sell-off here in Asia subsiding in the afternoon session, but by that time, it was too late. A sea of red really capturing stocks from Tokyo to Taipei, as you can see here from this board. The Hang Seng also not spared. There were also some concerns in Taiwan after Taiwan semiconductor issued that milder than expected outlook with regards to chip recovery that also weighed on semiconductor stocks in the region. But it was really all about the risk, the rise in risk-off sentiment because of the escalating tensions in the Middle East that weighed on stocks and also drove a lot of investors toward towards safe havens. The Nikkei 225 falling considerably today, but also the Japanese yen benefiting from this flight to safety alongside Japanese 10-year bond yields, as these are both seen as anchors or safe havens of choice in Southeast in Asia. Okay, take a look also at how gold miners in Australia defied the downturn of the ASX 200. There's a lot of gold miners out in Sydney, and they also benefit from that rise in gold spot prices, supporting those gold miners listed down under. The Singapore dollar also getting a benefit, as they are seen as also emerging safe haven currency of choice. They overcame early losses or early weakness in today's session and also ended with just a little bit more solid footing. But one sector to watch out for in Asia also are the airlines, because of two factors. One, if oil continues to rise, that could mean higher fuel costs for many carriers across this region. But also, if the airstrikes and the conflict in the Middle East continues to escalate, it means a lot of these carriers may have to reroute or consider different routes with regards to their flights from here to Europe. And that might cause a cloud of uncertainty for this particular space. For now, it's back to you guys, though. Good morning, Frank, once again.
All right, JP, thank you very much for that report. All right, we got a lot more to come here on Worldwide Exchange, including much more in this morning's Israel strike on Iran. A live report from Tel Aviv, that's coming up. But first, with rising geopolitical risk back on the front burner, what you should be doing with your money this morning, and then later, not forgetting about big tech and Netflix shares sinking despite an unexpected profit pop. We have a very busy hour still ahead when Worldwide Exchange returns. Stay with us. Welcome back to Worldwide Exchange. Markets around the world still in shock as investors digest the latest developments in the Middle East. Joining me now on the CNBC Newsline is Alex Morris, President and Chief Investment Officer of FM Investments. Alex, good morning. It is good to have you with us.
Frank, good to be back.
So give us a sense, Alex, how do you view this through an investor lens? This, again, Israeli strike on Iran has been called limited. We're told no major damage so far. However, we have not heard from the IDF as of yet, and we're actually expecting to hear from the Secretary of State later this morning at about 6:30 Eastern time. But I do want to get your sense through an investor's lens. How do you view this?
You know, despite the fear that a lot of folks are living under right now, as an investor, this is one of those things that the market tends to shrug off, right? This isn't going to immediately impact earnings that we're going to continue to hear about. It doesn't fundamentally change the direction of the U.S. real or financial economy. So like most global macro events, they make great headlines. But, you know, if you look out 10, 15, 20 trading days from now, markets tend to just power on based on other factors. And I think this will fall into that same category, less some volatility around oil and gold and a handful of headline haven assets over the next day or so.
Okay, I think you're hitting on my next question. We saw a spike in certain commodities, oil and gold being two of the highlight ones there. Is right now a time to possibly invest in those commodities with the expectation that these tensions might rise, or at least, you know, the sensitivity to these tensions appears to have risen after we saw oil jump about 3%, even though it has normalized now?
You know, we talked about gold last time you and I were together, and I still think gold has got some upward momentum to it, so it makes sense to continue to hold on to that. Oil, you know, is a tough asset class to play. I think the trend has certainly been to $100 a barrel and maybe then some. I doubt 150 is our end barrier, but this will continue to add to the strain that has already been plaguing the oil supply for some time, but I don't think this is the one item that forces it through a breakout and to stay there.
Got you. I just want to stick on the oil theme just for a minute. Oil is one of the factors that not only the ECB is weighing, but also the Fed when it comes to inflation. What do you make of John Williams putting on the table, saying it's not his base case, but he put it on the table that we could see a rate hike? The oil market, do you think that's, with these geopolitical tensions, is that something that's going to possibly delay that ECB cut and maybe even delay the Fed cut even further?
I think it's a good factor to delay both ECB and the Fed's desires to cut rates. I don't think it'll be the only factor. It certainly will be a convenient one that will make folks understand what they're up to. But I think there will be larger other driving factors in the U.S. in particular, likely to be housing and some other inflationary measures beyond just energy prices that are going to force that cut to be held off till well into this year. And although I wasn't in this camp 3 weeks ago, maybe no cut at all this year, assuming they can find a way to stick the landing with their narrative.
All right, Alex Morris, good to see you. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Frank. Take
care. All right, ahead here on Worldwide Exchange, a big morning for big tech as Netflix shares, they take a hit despite an unexpected first quarter profit pop. What's missing the market for investors this morning? Plus, look at the state of big tech regulation in Europe, a one-on-one with EU Commissioner for Competition, Margarita Vestager. That's coming up when Worldwide Exchange returns. Welcome back to Worldwide Exchange. Time for one of your big money movers. That's Netflix. Shares under pressure despite blowing past subscriber growth expectations. Investors, they're instead focusing on the guidance or the lack thereof, as Netflix says it will no longer provide subscriber and revenue per user figures. Steve Kovac joins us now with a look at the stock. Shares down more than 6%, Steve.
Yeah, but it's not because Netflix beat expectations again on the top and bottom lines, blowing away expectations even further on those subscriber additions. But shares fell in after-hours trading and down again 6% now after the company said it's going to disclose less data about subscribers starting next year. As for the results of the first quarter, the momentum and growth from cracking down on password sharing continues. But don't get too used to judging Netflix by their subscribers. Company saying yesterday it will stop reporting quarterly subscriber numbers and average revenue per membership starting next year with its Q1 2025 earnings report. The reasoning for that, Netflix says revenue and engagement are better metrics of its success, not the number of subscribers. It's also because there's a variety of pricing plans now and shared plans and ad-supported tiers that kind of mix up the picture a little bit. Here's how co-CEO Greg Peters explained it on the earnings call last night.
Each incremental member has a different business impact. And all of that means that that historical simple math that we all did, you know, number of members times the monthly price, is increasingly less accurate in capturing the state of the business. So this change is really motivated by wanting to focus on what we see are the key metrics that we think matter most to the business.
So that was the news that appeared to drag the stock lower in after-hours trading, and even lower now. It's down 3% last night, down about 6% now. As for guidance, revenue for the second quarter was a hair lighter than expectations, $9.549 billion. That would be up about 16%, but no guidance on subscribers, of course, Frank.
All right, Steve, thank you very much. I would ask you a question, but you already told me you're not going to give me your password, so I'm just going to move on to the analyst. On a serious note, good to see you. All right, for more on the quarter, let's bring in Jason Bazinet, media and entertainment analyst at Citi. Jason, good morning. Good to see you.
Morning, Frank. How are you?
All right, I want to talk to you about the reaction in the stock here. By the way, your price target 660, about an 8% upside from here. You're a bit more bullish than the consensus. Why is Netflix stock down? I mean, beats kind of across the board with the exception of that 2024 outlook when it comes to revenue. Is that what's really weighing on the stock, or is it really about disclosing these subscriber numbers and average revenue per user numbers?
Well, I think there's a couple layers to this. The context is the net adds have been very strong, and the buy side has been trying to figure out why it's so strong. So by pulling the subscriber guidance beginning in the first quarter of next year, the inference is that all of this strength is really due to the password sharing, but the ad tier isn't really taking off. That's going to be the cynic's interpretation. So we're going to see password sharing sort of fade, and then there should be a baton that gets passed off to the ad tier. But if that's not going so well, then you just say, well, we're not going to give you sub-disclosures. That's the fear. The second layer of this is there was a bull case circulating around on the buy side that Netflix was going to sort of flatline cash content spend at $17.5 billion. And they didn't say that. They said cash content spend is going to continue to grow. It's going to grow a little bit less than revenue, but it's keep going up. So a lot of the bulls that were playing for that, you know, they definitely didn't hear that last night.
So you're saying it's really just about disclosing those subscriber revenue numbers because it just leaves more mystery around the success of their ad business and also the success of password crackdown. So it really is just that.
Yeah, because the password crackdown is viewed as transitory.
Okay.
So we need the baton.
It can just be, yeah. It can just be, yeah, Jason. So one of the things of the risk of this company that you're highlighting, by the way, which is having a great year, it's up about 18% year to date, is the inability to raise prices and also competition from other players. So in all fairness, we have heard of some team ups from some other streaming services. The most notable one, though, is Disney, Fox and Discovery on a sports focused team up. That's not really Netflix's thing. However, I did notice, and tell me if this is a big deal, revenue per user, it missed estimates in every region except for the U.S. So how big of a risk is losing pricing power in these other regions? It seems to be maintaining pricing power in the U.S.
Yeah, I would say that that's not a super big deal, but it's a good observation. And, you know, the United States is a unique market in every metric, whether it's pay TV, advertising revenues. We're just sort of the standout relative to the rest of the world. And so I think you'll continue to see a divergence between U.S. Canada trends and what's happening in the rest of the world. It's a very astute observation.
All right, Jason, here's a yes or no. You can just answer yes or no on this. Jake Paul, Mike Tyson, is that going to be a success? Is that going to be the start of something big for Netflix?
Yes.
There you go.
Yes.
One word answer. You don't hear that from an analyst very often. Jason Bazinet, your price target for Netflix right now, one of the most bullish on the street, 8% upside. Great to see you. Thank you very much.
Good to see you. Thanks.
All right. Coming up here on Worldwide Exchange, we go live to Tel Aviv for the latest on Israel's retaliatory strike on Iran and any hints of further escalation. And if you haven't already, follow our podcast. If you miss Worldwide Exchange, check us out on Apple, Spotify, or other podcast apps. Much more Worldwide Exchange coming up after this. And welcome back to Worldwide Exchange. I am Frank Holland coming to you from CNBC London. We begin this morning with breaking news. Israel retaliating against Iran's massive and unprecedented drone and missile attack on its territory almost 1 week ago. This morning, the Wall Street Journal reporting President Biden is weighing more than $1 billion in new arms for Israel. Raf Sanchez from NBC News is live in Tel Aviv with the very latest on this developing story. Raf.
Frank, good morning. For a week now, the world has been waiting to see how Israel would respond to that massive barrage of Iranian drones and missiles. And this morning, we have an answer. And it does not appear, at least right now, like we are hurtling towards further escalation. Here's what we know. A source familiar with the situation tells me Israel carried out a limited strike in the early hours of Friday morning. Since then, they have been assessing the effectiveness of that strike, assessing the battle damage. The target appears to be a military base near the city of Isfahan, which is a couple of hours south of Tehran. We do not know at this point how this strike was carried out, whether it was aircraft, whether it was long-range missiles, whether it was smaller drones or not. U.S. officials say the United States played no role in this attack. They want the Iranians to know that. The U.S. also got at least a generalized heads up from the Israelis that this strike was coming. That is important, Frank, because it gave American forces across the Middle East time to make sure their own defenses were up and running in case Iran or its proxies retaliated against American forces. There are no reports of that at this point. And Frank, what is almost as important as the strike itself is what both Israel and Iran are saying about it. Iranian state media this morning is playing down what happened in the early hours in Isfahan. They are saying life is normal in the city right now, that there are no reports of any major damage. They're saying the explosions that woke residents up were Iranian air defense missiles going off, intercepting what they're calling very small drones. At this point, no one is officially pointing the finger at Israel inside of Iran. There are no pledges of retaliation against Iran. And here in Israel, the Israeli government is neither confirming nor denying its role, which is a way of not rubbing Iran's face in this, and they are certainly not crowing. Frank?
So, Raf, you mentioned the reports coming out of Iran, but you're there on the ground in Tel Aviv. What's the mood there?
It's interesting, Frank. It's quiet. It's calm. We're here in central Tel Aviv. The Israeli military has not imposed any new restrictions on the civilian population in this country. That's very different from the situation over the weekend when the military said people should not gather in large groups, when they canceled school and summer camps because of their concern. The fact that at this stage there is no new restrictions suggests that Israel, right now at least, is not bracing for major retaliation. We are not expecting right now to hear any speeches from Prime Minister Netanyahu or senior Israeli officials commenting on this attack. The official line is Israel is neither confirming nor denying. And it's interesting, inside of Netanyahu's government, we are seeing mixed reactions. The far right saying this wasn't enough. The more center right saying Israel has restored deterrence. Frank?
Yeah. We are expecting to hear from the U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken coming up at 6:30 Eastern time. Raf, this is obviously a developing story. You and your crew stay safe. Thank you for that report. All right, we're digging into the market reaction around the Israel strike and possible escalation of this regional conflict. You can take a look right here. We're going to show it to you in just a second. The S&P 500 futures, they just sunk around 10 p.m. last night when the first reports of this strike started coming in. You see the pretty dramatic move to the downside right there. Futures are in the red right now, but still, as we're about to show you, they are well off their lows. It's like the Dow would open up just over 100 points lower. The S&P and the NASDAQ in the red, the NASDAQ harder hit, but that might also likely be off the Netflix results. But again, futures in the red. We saw a similar knee-jerk reaction in the Treasuries. You can see the 10-year bond yield also off its lows that it hit in the past 12 hours. Similar move there. Right now, the benchmark trading at about 4.58% when it comes to yield. We're also looking at energy, oil in particular. Oil trying to hold on to some gains that we saw. We saw oil spike about 3% after the reports of this attack. Right now, it's normalized a bit. We're seeing WTI up about 0.5% right now, trading at about $83.20 a barrel. We'll have much more in crude's response in just a moment. A pretty similar story for gold, holding just below its record highs. We saw gold cross the 2400 mark. Right now, you see it again. It's pulled back from that. If you look at the chart, you see the spike into the safe haven asset just after 10 o'clock. And again, gold, another commodity that's kind of normalized. And we're seeing some whipsaw action in the crypto market, specifically with Bitcoin. Taking a look at Bitcoin right now. Bitcoin moving higher right now, up about 2%. You see the move down at about 10 o'clock. People selling off Bitcoin. I believe it dropped down to about 61,000. Right now it's about 64,000, almost just crossed 750. You see Bitcoin moving right there, up over 2%. All right, turn our attention back over to oil. WTI and Brent spiking on word of Israel carrying out strikes in Iran. As we mentioned, both have pulled back a bit after that initial pop. You see in the moves on the chart right now. Right now, Brent crude up almost 0.5%. WTI up over just over 0.5%. For much more on this, let's bring in Amrita Sen, founder and director of research at Energy Aspects. Amrita, good morning. Good to have you here.
Morning. Yeah, twice in a week. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, twice. I got to see you in person as well. So let's get down to business on this just for a second. The oil markets, we saw them spike about 3%. They pulled back quite a bit right now. Is the oil market responding to what they believe is a de-escalation right now? Do they believe that perhaps this issue has, quote unquote, been resolved, as Iran tried to say, now that Israel has made these strikes? Is that why we've seen oil prices pull back? Or is there something else pulling them back? Because they spiked very quickly and they pulled back relatively quickly as well.
I think the spike was on headlines, right? You always tend to get that reaction, but you're exactly right. I mean, our view has been that we don't think this is going to escalate out of hand, that yes, Israel is going to respond. But again, also in terms of the way they've responded, it's very much a message being sent to the Iranian leadership that, look, should we choose to attack, we can, right? It's a warning sign more than anything else. And that's what we had very much expected them to do. It's a calibrated response, and it's not likely to escalate the situation further. Now, that doesn't mean that there are still no risks of miscalculation. That still is there. I don't think the market can afford to sell off significantly. But look, on a fundamental basis, we have been calling for a pullback in the near term. It's just seasonally a softer period, right? We had a premature rally. We need to rebase before we can rally quite a bit harder in the summer. That's when the fundamentals really kick in with over 2 million barrels per day of stock draws.
You know, Amrita, it's so interesting. You're calling for a pullback. I had a guest on Street Signs earlier today. He called for oil to possibly go up to $100 a barrel. The thing he was really citing is the possibility of Iranian proxies stepping up their attacks in the Strait of Hormuz. He says there's about 21 million barrels per day that could be cut off, or even part of that's cut off. It would lead to an oil rally. You don't see the same risk when it comes to the Strait of Hormuz or even prices moving higher?
I don't think we actually see the Straits of Hormuz being a risk, simply because Iran uses the Straits themselves to sell their oil over a million barrels per day that they're selling to China, right? So they wouldn't necessarily be harming themselves. Again, if the situation were to escalate, of course we can hit triple digit. And that's why I'm saying we can't rule out the possibility of miscalculation, but that's not the base case. The base case is that, you know, flat price will remain relatively supported, small pullbacks, but relatively supported. But generally speaking, if the market realizes that we are not going to be losing oil and gas supplies with a seasonally weaker fundamental backdrop, it's more likely than not that we're not going to be going up. Maybe we drift a bit lower.
All right. Emery DeSantis, it is always great to see you. Looking at oil prices, just pulling back just a little bit
Thank you. Now.
Brent crude up about 0.33%. WTI up under 0.5% right now. Always great to see you. Thanks for your time and for your insight. All right, coming up, an exclusive one-on-one conversation with the regulator leading the charge against big tech's dominance, including new developments around our office's probe into Microsoft's investment into OpenAI. The European Commission's Margherita Vestager is next, right here on Worldwide Exchange. All right, welcome back to Worldwide Exchange. We're turning to tech and a developing story. EU antitrust regulators pushing back on a report they have concluded Microsoft's $13 billion investment into OpenAI is not an acquisition and will avoid a formal investigation. Instead, officials tell CNBC the preliminary probe is still ongoing and may actually be reviewable under the bloc's merger regulation oversight. Joining me now with much more on this is Margherita Vestager, Executive Vice President of the European Commission for a Europe Fit for the Digital Age. Good morning. It is great to have you here. And I really hope I said your name right. I don't want to be added to that highlight reel to people not doing it right.
No, good morning. It's great to see you. And thank you very much for the effort in having such an unpronounceable name. So thank you very much.
Well, it's a great name. We're glad to have you here. So I do want to get down to business with you. This is the first time we've had the opportunity to speak with you since the U.S. Department of Justice launched its probe against Apple. I want to get your thoughts on the case and also some of the real granularity of it. I mean, we heard them talk about the App Store, digital wallets, even the color of messaging bubbles. What did you make of that?
I think it's a very important case. I think it's very important that antitrust authorities do their job in order to have fair competition in everything digital. You know, in the US as well as in Europe, we have, you know, sparkling, vibrant innovation in environment and ecosystems. And of course, it is very important that they can get to their customers via maybe a second app store, via sideloading, so that they are enabled, because real competition comes in an open, contestable market. And I think that is what the US case is about. This is what our cases are about, both when you look at the Apple case, but also when we enforce our Digital Markets Act.
Do you agree that Apple has a monopoly on the smartphone market? I mean, that was really the headline when it came to the DOJ's case.
Of course, I have not had a chance, and it's not my responsibility to go into the details of the case. But I think what we see is that there are indeed very different and very separate markets when it comes to smartphones. You know, a very high-end, very expensive phone is not in the same market as a very, you know, affordable, cheaper phone. So one should be very nuanced when it comes to comparing phones, because those who are in the market for very high-end, they're not in the market for a number of other phones.
Okay. I want to talk to you about the Digital Markets Act. You are investigating Apple along with some other big tech players. It's not just about Apple, Google and Meta included, in relation to their compliance. Can you share an update?
Yeah, we have the suspicion that these companies are not living up to their obligations. They play a very important role in the digital markets. And if they close the market, then no other business literally have a fair chance of getting to their customers. For instance, when it comes to preferencing. If you get a Google search, you're looking for a flight and you only get Google flights, well, there may be other service providers who are much better in providing services to you. Same when it comes to Amazon. Do we see that they are making sure that you see all the amazing offers that independent sellers on the platform actually would have for you? And last but not least, Can you go to another app store if you're not happy, if you prefer to have a games app store or a app store with, you know, really, really excessively secure apps? Or would you want to have an app store where young people can feel that what they are offered there is actually safe? So quite a number of issues where, of course, we would want full compliance. And we see that there are differences in how businesses, they relate to us.
You know, the word compliance really stuck out in what you had to say. I want to go back to a compliance or what could be a compliance issue. You tell me, Apple, it still hasn't approved Spotify's update following your antitrust ruling. Your office said it's investigating. What's the status of that and what happens if Apple isn't in compliance?
Well, this is absolutely top priority because it's about our choice as consumers. Well, you can choose to pay within the Apple system and pay a 30% surcharge in order for that. but it should also be possible for you just to have a direct relationship with your service provider and pay the price that they're asking without the 30% Apple service fee. So it's really high priority for us to get Apple to comply with this, and we're investigating this as a very high priority.
All right, with so much going on in the global economy, I just want to get your broad sense on when it comes to big tech and AI, what regulation are you looking at? What do you think needs to be done going forward? I mean, you're one of the most influential voices when it comes to big tech regulation. As we see this emerging tech continue to develop, what are you looking at? What are the big issues in the future that we think we need to identify?
Well, you know, we have brought our European house in order. We now have an AI Act that kicks in full within 6, 18, 24 months. But right here and now, you know, we're also asking AI providers to be very prudent. This is an enormous election year. We need for service providers to make sure that when AI sort of enters into that space, that artificial content can be recognized, that deepfakes can be dealt with. Because if not, well, then the integrity of our election is put at risk. And some people talk about the existential risk for humanity. That's important. But there are existential risks for each and every one of us. If the algorithm doesn't work well, so you're not accepted to university, or you cannot get a mortgage, or you cannot insure your car, well, that is quite essential for each and every one of us. And I think that is the first port to call to make sure that when AI is used in that kind of risky use cases, that we have quite a close grip on it. Well, if it's used for a recommender system or as a bot for customer service, well, that's a completely different matter.
You know, Margarita, while we're talking about AI, I do want to come full circle when it comes to Microsoft's investment in OpenAI. Can you give us one final update on that probe and how you're viewing the investigation?
Well, we're not done. Of course, our concern is if deals are being constructed in a way where one tries to avoid merger control, that there is a de facto change of control, but one has constructed the deal in a way so that one can say, oh, we don't need to spend time with any regulator on this planet. And that, of course, is important for us because we are there in order to make sure that the market is open, that competitors have a fair chance of making it. And this is why it's important. And this is, of course, also why we discuss with colleagues how they see this this way of supporting a company if that is something that we should look at. So we keep it open, but, of course, intensify because also fair enough at a certain time we need to make conclusions.
All right. Margarita Vestager, great to see you. Thank you very much for being here on Worldwide Exchange.
It was a pleasure to be here. Thank you very much for having me.
It is always a pleasure. Thanks for coming back on. All right, coming up here on Worldwide Exchange, more on the breaking news of Israel's strikes on Iran and what you need to do with your money around these rising Mideast tensions. And as we head to break, we're taking a look at futures again off of their lows of earlier. But right now, it looks like the Dow would open about 100 points lower. The Nasdaq also under pressure. We'll continue to watch the futures throughout the morning, and we will be right back after this break. Welcome back to Worldwide Exchange. Let's get a check on some of this morning's top corporate stories with your WEX wrap-up. We start with shares of Netflix under pressure this morning, despite reporting that profits surged in the first quarter due to strong subscriber growth. But the streaming giant delivered mixed outlook and announced plans to stop reporting subscriber numbers on a regular basis starting next year. You can see shares are down just about 6%. KB Home's board authorizing the repurchase of up to $1 billion in shares. The home builder also announcing it is raising the company's quarterly dividend to 25 cents a share from 20 cents. Stock moving higher right now, up almost 1.5%. Apple revealing it has removed Meta's WhatsApp and Threads applications from its app store in China. The company saying it was ordered to do so by regulators there due to, quote, national security concerns. All right, turning now to the trading day ahead. Investors, they're waking up to breaking news and reports that Israel has carried out limited retaliatory strikes on Iran in response to Iran's massive and unprecedented drone and missile attack on its territory almost 1 week ago. Sources are characterizing the early morning strike to NBC News as, quote, limited, with officials still assessing the damage and the effectiveness this morning. No comment from the Israel Defense Force at this hour. Looking at the market reaction, futures right now, as we mentioned on Morning Long, they're in the red, but off of their lows of earlier. You see right now, it looks like the Dow would open up just over 100 points lower than NASDAQ under a bit of pressure as well. Joining me now is Carrie Firestone, co-founder and executive chairman at Aureus Asset Management. She's also a CNBC contributor. Carrie, good morning. Good to see you.
Nice to see you, Frank.
What do you make of the reaction in the markets we're seeing right now? Again, futures lower, but pulling back from, you know, steeper lows earlier right after these attacks.
Well, Frank, I think it's a sign of the level of the reaction. It was, as Israel characterized it, a weak response. It was not an all-out military effort. And I think the market should feel relieved about that. The market has been jittery, which is my word, and very concerned about the escalation of this war between Israel and Iran. And for Israel to have essentially detonated Iran's military action, and now whatever has happened here has not resulted in much destruction, if any, because it has not been reported yet, I think is a very good sign for the world and for the market.
Okay, let's get back to the markets. Tech's been under quite a bit of pressure. It seems like it started when we saw a change in outlook when it came to the Fed rate cuts. But I know you're watching one stock in particular that you now say is probably the most important one in the market. It's NVIDIA, technically in correction territory, still up about 70% year to date, but in correction territory and trading lower this morning. These moves in NVIDIA, what does it say to you about the broader market?
Well, the market has been following NVIDIA, more or less. Remember, we were up 27% from late October until April 1st. Driven by the AI march, and NVIDIA is the leader of that march. Now with NVIDIA weakening, and it grew to the third largest market capitalization company in the world, up to over 5% market cap, that's a sign that we're calming down the euphoria. I know it's been phenomenal for NVIDIA. It still doesn't trade at a very hefty multiple, but you can't have just forward march without recognizing that the rest of artificial intelligence has not been one of profit making as it is for NVIDIA. NVIDIA sells the chips. Everyone else buys the chips. And for slowing down here of this stock, it's just a sign that the rest of the market has to regroup.
All right. So much to talk about, but can't leave without getting your WEX word of the day. What is it and why?
Yeah, well, that word is jittery, and I gave it to you yesterday. I mean, today would be another example. The market and investors are waiting to find out, number one, if we have very good earnings. I mean, the market is up, multiples are up. We have to have earnings that justify the price of the stocks. Market is worried about interest rates. We've got
there. Carrie Firestone, great to see you. Thank you very much. We got to leave it there. You've been listening to CNBC's Worldwide Exchange. You can always catch us live weekdays at 5 a.m. Eastern.